I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
I've heard a lot about you, Joe. I'm really excited to get into this a little bit. Yeah, Amy brings you up a lot on the podcast.
Well, I'm proud of Amy. That's for sure.
Oh, you're sweet.
Followed in the footsteps, you know.
Indeed, directly so. But
you were always a performer since you were little. So.
Oh yeah, let's just do this. Let's talk about young baby Amy. The whole time, tell us little baby performer Amy stories. That is the next 60 minutes. Please.
Well, you guys know Amy. I mean, she's she's smart, beautiful, outspoken, you know, funny. She's everything, and she was that when she was little. So, just her. Little. Just think of her like a 5-year-old.
That's what I say. I just picture her as a tinier version is all, just, you know?
Yeah. Coming out with these great same answers thing. Just shock me and make me laugh at the same time. So, that's her.
Oh, God, that's funny. I told somebody the other day that the first impression I ever did was Julia Child as a little girl. Yep.
That's awesome.
Well, she's probably told you a little bit about the family we grew up in, so there's a lot of laughs there.
Tell us about the family. It's funny, I don't usually talk about the family because they begged for it too much. You know, for so many years, they'd be like, you doing comedy, huh? Oh, I bet you're talking about us all the time. And I'd be like, no, forget it. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, actually, I'm not talking about you. I'm avoiding talking about you. No, but I hear you. But we have some funny stories.
So thanks, Uncle Joe, for joining us. Oh, I don't know if you can hear it, but the band just started next door. So,
did they?
Yep.
Just in time.
Yep.
They playing anything good?
Yeah, I don't know. Anything right now good? They're just riffing on a bass, I think.
That's
I don't
what
know.
It sounds like, yeah.
So we'll see what happens. There's also a shower next to us.
That'll be the name of the interview. You can call it Riffing on the Bass.
Riffing on the Bass. fun. So Joe, I've always wondered, Joe was right out of high school when I was born. And moved straight to New York City. What was your impetus for just like graduating high school and being like, all right, let's do this. I want to go be an actor. Let's move to New York.
Well, it's probably a little different than that. I mean, the truth is, you know, I when I was really young, I wanted to be a professional hockey player, but. Unfortunately, I didn't have quite the talent, but I played a lot of hockey.
Huh.
And then in junior high school, I started doing some drama stuff. And by the time I got to high school, it was a real focus. So I kind of knew then. And then I went off to do summer stock at a young age. There used to be a guy that came to the high school I was at, the Severian Brothers All Boys High School.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a musical there every year, and he had a summer theater in New Jersey called Surf Light Summer Theater.
Oh.
And he invited me there as an apprentice, and I met many lifelong friends at that particular theater. But I had planned on going to school. I went, I don't know if you knew this, Amy, but I auditioned for NYU.
Huh.
And I got into NYU, and then I thumbed 9 hours to Ithaca, New York, and went up there and auditioned for Ithaca College, and asked them point blank while I was there if they were going to accept me, because if they were, I was going to stay until Monday to talk to financial aid. And they actually offered me some money, and it turned out that they thought Pacheco, it's a long story, but they thought my name, they thought I was Spanish.
Oh,
and when
yeah.
they flew on that Monday, they said, well, unfortunately, this scholarship is only for minorities. So I wasn't able to go there. And NYU, you know your grandfather, I went to him one day and said, listen, I need $5,000 to start my first semester. And he was like, $5,000? So I wasn't able to go, but I wanted to. So in the final hour, I said, you know what? Well, I guess I'm just going to go to New York. So I did. But I tried very hard to go. I wanted to get my undergrad before that.
Oh, man.
Anyway,
I can't tell you how many
story.
People also think I'm Spanish. Every time. Every other Pacheco I've ever met has been Spanish.
See, I would have assumed Italian.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, Italian. I don't
and they
Pacheco
always pronounce it, they always say Pacheco.
Yep. Oh, my God. Everywhere. And they
yeah,
tell
so
you
I,
you're
I,
wrong.
Yeah, they tell you you're wrong.
Yes.
That's right. They say you're wrong.
You're like,
I got into a big argument with a guy one day who said my name was Pacheco,
yeah.
was Pacheco, but not Pacheco.
Yeah.
So and I thanked him for that information. I said, God, I've gone 58 years with bad information. Thank you.
You dealt with it better than me. I go, hey,
yeah,
guy, hey, listen, if I tell you my last name is Jones and I spell it S-M-I-T-H, you're going to call me Jones, all right? Oh,
see,
yeah.
Those are the smart-ass answers I like.
Wow, so I did not know. First of all, hitchhiking to Ithaca sounds wild.
I
hitchhiked there, and then I slept when I got there that night. I didn't know a soul. It was a Friday night, and I went to the student lounge, and I said to some guy that I met, hey, man, you know where I can sleep somewhere? I was like 18 years old.
Sure.
He showed me a place to sleep. And then 2 days later, I met a girl I know who was part of a sorority, and I went and stayed in the sorority house for a few days.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
That too.
Yeah.
That
was...
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I did not know that that you had gotten into NYU and all that stuff. For the official record, I also did musicals at Xaverian High School. So the school that
oh,
you went
right.
to... I was like directly following in your direct footsteps by I went to the all girls school and
oh,
so
okay.
I went to the boys school to be the girls in the musicals there. So
I just assumed it's Shakespeare.
I was thinking yeah they were just
no I mean it was
yeah,
like
yeah that's right
yeah what musicals
what was
did
the
you
name
do
of that school
that I went to
yeah
oh I went to Ursuline.
Ursuline, right. I did a musical there, too. Hello, Dolly, I did at Ursuline when you were probably not born yet.
Oh, weird. Ursuline did not have its own theater program when I was there until my senior year when we argued that we needed one, that it was discriminatory that we didn't, and they gave us this 19-year-old... they hired this 19-year-old director who did this French play called Illusions, and it was horrific and insane. and
as
later
French plays are.
Yeah, but it was just like, who did you think you were hiring? Like, what?
Yeah.
Where did you get her? I mean, I'm sure Craigslist wasn't a thing, but she was totally a Craigslist pick for sure.
The green sheets or whatever.
Yeah, it was insane.
I wish I'd seen that production.
It was really weird. Yeah, for sure. but yeah, no, I did Xaverian too. So and then later went and worked at NYU. So
what,
I pretty
what,
much just followed directly to do exactly what Joe does. I didn't go to Ithaca. Sorry.
what musicals did you do at Xaverian?
It's Xaverian. I did it my sophomore, junior, and senior year, and I did Oklahoma, Guys and Dolls, and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Hmm. Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah,
that's
I
shit.
I believe I saw Oklahoma. I might have seen Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
You were in it. But,
if you got Oklahoma,
yeah.
That was the first ever thing I was ever in. Ever, ever.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I believe I did see that.
That's funny.
Yeah, just
what ones did you do?
I did West Side Story.
course.
And then I did Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof.
Nice.
And then I did Moonface Martin and Anything Goes.
Huh. Moonface Martin. Never heard of Moonface Martin.
Yeah, he's the priest that was the gangster.
Oh, and Anything Goes. I see, okay, I see. I dig it. Oh, fun. Yeah, I was like background number one in Oklahoma and like background number two in Guys and Dolls and like Lady Who Sings with Judas at the end in Jesus Christ Superstar. So, yeah, I never had any actual roles. But I guess most of those are like, you know, heavy dude roles because it's a boy school.
I guess they would tend to West Side Story, right? You know, all of them.
I guess there's some girls in that, yeah.
Yeah, there's some
Maria.
There's one of them,
ladies in that one. Yeah.
now I'm starting to see why you might have done drama then. The girls' school coming over.
I think that's why both of us did theater.
They brought girls over.
They brought them to you, and then for me, they just bust me to the boys. I was like, I'll take it. And my mom was like, a Catholic school? That sounds great. And I was like, okay, mom.
Little do they know.
Yeah. Little did they know.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, so funny. So you went to New York. Papa says, no, you're not getting any money. You're not going to NYU. And you're like, forget it. I'm going anyway. So what happened when you first got there?
I was there for a few weeks, and I used to do a lot of musicals. So I auditioned for Grease for the national tour, and I was out on the road with the national tour within like 2 months of my getting there.
Oh, wow.
Great. So I spent like a year and a half on the road with that. It was a bus and truck tour. So it was, just like it sounds, buses and trucks. And, it was fun. We went all over the U.S. and Canada. And it was around the time that the movie had just come out.
Right.
So we were sold out everywhere we went because it was just like very popular at the time, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, great timing. And then I went back to New York and starred.
Nobody was like, you should save some money while you're working on the road. You were like, let's spend it at this truck stop.
Well, exactly. I spent all my money. I mean, at the time, I don't remember exactly, but I think I made $900 a week.
Wow. I'd like to make $900 a week.
Oh shit, right now. That would be awesome.
Would be excellent at this very moment. And this is the 70s.
That's happened to me like twice in my life.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I was like, don't tell us what you make, Patrick.
No, I'm trying to do the calculations of what 900 in that time period would be today.
It'd be a lot.
Yeah.
It'd be quite a bit, for sure. Wow. So you get 900.
That was around 1978. I'm grabbing my mail. That's what it sounds like.
It's fallen into a cave, I think.
That seems fine. Just don't let your neighbors catch you into a fight of some situation. Yeah. Don't let them hand you a picket sign and then you're running outside and they're like, hell no, we won't go. We're like, well, this is barely taking a turn.
No. I'm gonna be gone. Then who knows? I could pop them back to no apartment. But anyway.
That's not funny.
Very serious problem.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your the potential of you not having a home.
I pictured an entire building gone.
Laughter is the answer. So laugh all you want. I love it.
Oh God! All right, so you get back from you get back from the Grease tour. That's a crazy like kicker off as soon as you like get to New York to just be like, hi, welcome to New York. Here's a gig for 2 years.
Yeah. So like did. Did you put the horseshoe up your ass before you thumbed it through to New York?
Because that's awesome. There was no horseshoe because that was the good part. And then after that, it got a little rough for a while.
Sure.
I hit pay dirt in the beginning, and then there was a very different story for a while. I mean, can we get serious here on this podcast?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
Talk about
so
it.
So serious.
Is honesty allowed?
I mean, it's not all jokes.
Well, I got to New York and I left home you know, at a young age, I think I probably ran from home from, you know, from certain things like we all do. And I got to New York, and I immediately went out on the road with that. And then when I got back, you know, I did what most actors do. I mean, Amy, you live there, so, you know, I was bartending. I was working construction. I bartended in the Village for a long time. And, you know, you start to get into that nightlife in the Village, and you're young, you're in your 20s. And, you know, I got a little too carried away with the party life. And I kind of thought that a career would come to me. And I really kind of got lost for about 8 or 9 years in drugs and alcohol. And then when I was about 29 years old, I stopped doing drugs and alcohol completely. And now it's been just the other day, the 23rd of March, I was 27 years without any drink or drugs.
Wow. Oh, wow, congrats.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
That's amazing.
I was in New York in the 80s when...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when Studio 54 was open, when Coke was flowing like crazy, it was a complete party town. And as you well know, in any career, whether it's acting or, you know, whatever you choose, whatever field, business, at a certain point in your life, you have to be really focused. Mm-hmm. And the people that surrounded me, the other actors that were really focused in their 20s, really went somewhere quickly, or they at least the trajectory was forward motion. You get to New York City and you start, you know, getting crazy with the party life, you know, it can be difficult.
Yeah.
But that was up until I was about 29. And then... Is that the next question? Because I'm not even sure. Is that the kind of information you want in this?
Yeah, season? Yeah. No, absolutely. No, it's good to know different things. I was just thinking that, you know, now that I'm a little bit older myself and I have been part of different... you know, theater scenes and stuff like that. Like, even the fact that we shared both living in New York. When I moved to, like, I hardly drink now. But it's because when I lived in New York, I drank a lot. And I got really used to not having to drive. And just, you know, being able to... And also, keep in mind, I lived in New York... Like, just to frame, he lives in New York in the 80s, so it's like, you know, people are just handing you drugs on the side of the road. I lived in New York from, like, 2001 to 2007. So there's, like, guys with machine guns on the street corners who are protecting because there's just been a terrorist attack. Right. It's a very different place. But
yeah,
their cocaine was nowhere near as good.
yeah, and they'd hand it to you in half a bomb, so it'd be like, oh, don't do that. But at the same time, there's still a lot of drinking, and there was also, you know, that being said, I never felt uncomfortable because there were like army guys in every train station. I never felt unsafe being on the subway, so like I would get drunk every night. And just get on the subway home and never think, like, I'm going to be attacked. Because there was just, like, armed guards, like, everywhere. So for me, like, technically to my parents, they were like, oh, she's safe now. Even though I'm sure they were like, why is she in New York? It just got hit with a terrorist attack. And I was like, that's when I'm moving. But at the same time, it, like... So anyway, I drank a lot, did a lot of stuff there. And now that I live in Texas, when I first moved here... I've told this story before, but I'll tell you, Joey, because I don't know if I've ever told you this. Like, maybe like the first year that I lived here, it was right around my birthday, and I went to a party at my friend's house, and it was my birthday, so they got me good and sloshed, and I got in my car, and I went to drive home, and I got pulled over. And thankfully, and this is horrible to say so, but thankfully the registration was out on my car. So when they pulled me over, I immediately just brought that up. I was like, oh, I'm super sorry about my registration, officer. I'm gonna get that taken care of. And the person just immediately, like, directed their attention to that infraction versus trying to say, like, hey, have you been drinking tonight? It's the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what are you doing? So I was like, here's my license and insurance. Super sorry. Give me a ticket for the registration. Huh. And then they went back to go write me the ticket. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, God.
Didn't I tell you she was smart?
Yeah. You get out, you start breaking, like, the headlights and stuff. Like, yeah, you should probably ring this up, too. Everything's fine.
I don't know if you noticed, but it's also, I don't have an inspection sticker. You should write that up. No, but yeah, so I totally directed their attention. They came back. Here's where I was like, oh, you're too lucky, Amy. The cop comes back and goes, oh, I just looked at your license. It's your birthday. I won't give you a ticket. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh God.
That's insane.
So I'm like, oh, thank you. That's really nice of you. I really appreciate that. And he's like, just go home. And I get, like, you know how, like, then you have to drive away in front of the cop?
Right.
And, like, they follow you for a second and then drive away? Well, I was like, well, here's hoping I don't swerve all over the road right now. Because he was just real nice. And, yeah, so I drove away, and after that, I was so freaked and so, like, you just narrowly missed being arrested on a holiday weekend on your birthday. So I was very concerned, and all after that, I was like, I'm not drinking anymore. Mm-hmm. And now I just don't. Now I just don't. Mm-hmm. And so,
well,
I totally you know. Get you. I mean, I didn't go down your dark road for sure, but I definitely hit a dark road and was like, oh, I could have really messed myself up.
Ooh, look at the lighting on this road. I'm going to go down this road now.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the dark period. It got lighter. It got a lot lighter. But,
yeah.
You know.
Also, ultimately, I was going to say, one of the things that I've noticed getting a little bit older myself is that I deal with, especially because I teach people, so I'll teach people acting, and I'll teach people, you know, sketch writing, that kind of stuff, and I can see people who are going down that dark road, where, like, you're right, the people who, like, put their nose to the grindstone, they're going to do something with themselves. Like, if they really want to get out there and get good work done and, like, put themselves where they need to, go to New York or LA and, like, get an agent and do all that stuff, yeah, they're gonna do well. And the people who are just there to go to open mics and get sloshed, they're just
right.
Not.
Well, I mean, you know, at the same time, too, as I was, you know, following that sort of path, I was always working as an actor. I was always going out of town and doing plays. I mean, I did a lot of plays out of town, so I kept working. And then when I eventually went to Circle in the Square in New York for a couple of years, the workshop, with somebody like Mike Rispoli, who's one of my oldest friends, and he works all the time in the business. He's you know, he's probably done 60 films by now, and he's on a new series that's out now.
I just saw that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with
the new Law and Order spinoff?
No. He's on a new series on HBO with, who's the guy?
Westworld?
What was that movie where the guy loses his arm in the mountain?
Oh, 127 Hours. You're talking about James Franco?
James Franco. He's doing his... James Franco.
See, we don't Google here. We don't need to.
Yeah. But we, and no, it's more fun again. You're right. But we started a theater company after Circle, and that theater company, the Willow Cabin Theater Company, ran for 15 years in New York.
Oh, wow.
So we did a lot of work with that, and through that theater company is where I met David Rabe, the playwright, and then started to do a lot of work with David Rabe. Like, I did several of his plays.
Yeah.
And we established a relationship together, and then I did a bunch of readings with him. I did a thing with Al Pacino and Julianne Moore. It was a script of his for a new movie that never got made, but so he kept me involved in a lot of stuff, so it turned very good after a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Is all this good stuff, is the Willow Cabin and David Rabe, is this after, in your 30s, after the dark period has over?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so, yeah, Rabe, that's where I had the association with Rabe.
Yeah.
And then, you know, through David, I ended up working. He was married to Jill Clayburgh, who's now, she passed away of cancer some years ago. But I did a play with Jill, and their daughter is the actress Lily Rabe.
Mm-hmm.
So Jill and I and Lily did two plays together. Just after 9/11, they were both about 9/11.
I think I saw those.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was after I went to Circle.
Yeah, absolutely. And Circle in the Square, that's like a conservatory, right? Like you went almost like, you took classes, not just workshops, or was it like...
We took the same program as NYU was affiliated with Circle. A lot of the NYU students were taking the same classes that we did, but at Circle, you were just getting a certificate, and at NYU, you were getting an undergrad. So basically, it was the same program, except for various elective classes that they would have to take for their BA program. But we took the same, you know, introduction to theater and voice and movement and, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
That I'm sure you took probably at Dallas.
We didn't have that much, voice and movement, but there was a lot of Shakespeare classes. That's what I did. That's what I got my degree in, was Shakespeare. I had a boyfriend who years later was a teacher at Circle in the Square, and I think Yumina, a girl that we know in Austin, when she went to New York, I think she took classes at Circle in the Square too. So I just wondered what kind of place it was. What kind of conservatory?
Yeah, it was a two-year conservatory, and it was, you know, it was, we had the same schedule, you know, basically January through June, and, you know, 5 days a week, a lot of homework, you know, it was a full-time schedule, and it was a really good program. I mean, I learned a lot about technique, and I learned from a lot of teachers. Was a teacher named Nico Sakharopoulos, who actually ran Williamstown for a number of years.
Then
there was Michael Kahn, who now runs, and he has for years, he's run the Folgers Theater in Washington. He's a big Shakespeare guy.
Yeah, I like the Shakespeare.
He's a big Shakespeare guy. So it was really, it was good training, and there were a lot of really good actors, and it was, and I also went to other classes in New York outside of, you know, Uta Hagen and those people, you know, down in the village, there were all these different classes that you could take. So I took a lot of classes. I was always, you know, behind on my rent because I was paying for a class.
You hear that, students? Be behind on your rent so you can take acting classes. It's a good thing.
I am way ahead of the game on this one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but, well, you know that life. You've lived it, so you get it.
Yeah, well, we were all just, there was a big, long discussion today on Facebook about, how much money you can spend on workshops and classes and stuff like that, and how much you're going to dedicate to it. So it's interesting, to hear, like, that happens to all of us. You know, we're all just trying to learn more stuff. We're trying to get connected with different people and soak up as much as we possibly can.
I
have a question. When you were in New York, right, when you first started, when you got the tour, did you have an agent, or did you just get the tour from an audition? And then when you came back and you were bartending, did you have an agent? How much agent situation
I got the tour from an audition. They used to be, you know, I think Backstage is still a newspaper, but a lot of auditions. You know, you get that newspaper every week and search through that, and you go to the Equity Building, and they would have open calls at the Equity Building. So you'd find out, you know, what shows were casting, and then you'd go wait online over at Equity.
Yeah.
And get online early in the morning, and, you know, and that's what I did. I went online, I auditioned, I got called back, came back, and I think I went to 3 or 4 callbacks for it, and then I walked in one day, I sang, and they said, you got the role, and I was like, great, you know, so... I took off a couple of weeks later, and the first stop we did was in Boston. We were at the theater downtown Boston. It's a huge theater, but it's not one of the big like the Schubert's or anything like that. I think it's the Beacon or something like that downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But
nice.
Anyway, so the whole family got to come.
Oh yeah.
So they all came. It was fun. It was fun.
Oh, that's great. That's
as I remember. Yeah, your father would come to, you know, he was a great supporter of mine. He was a great brother, my big brother, Amy's father, Ronnie, was my big brother, Ronnie. And he, when I was growing up, he treated me almost like a father. He took me everywhere. He was a great brother. When I do a play or a musical, Ronnie would come 2-3 times. He would just keep coming back. So.
He's a good consumer of the theater for sure. He consumed all of mine for a long time.
Mom. Yeah, and your mom too, of course. And my other brother would come too. Richie would come all the time. I had a very supportive fan, and Linda, my sister. Nobody on the air knows who these people are, but you do.
I was like, you don't even know. You don't know who our listen base is. It could be all of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was like, they know. Oh, man. That's so great.
So
at what point did you, was having an agent a thing, or like later on, or is that just something now with film that matters?
No. I had an agent in New York. I mean, I had several different agents. A lot of times you get with an agency and, you know, they kind of try you out and they send you out on different calls. And, you know, if you don't book something after a certain amount of time, they will drop you or do you want to somebody else. If you're of a certain age, you can get in to see any agency. If you're 18 to 27, 28, every agent will see you, I think, if you really push, because they're looking for, kids that they can basically, nurture their careers for them. After a certain age, you know, it's a little harder.
Hmm.
But I didn't really, you know, I kind of got so connected in theater that I got to know a lot of people. And I was a terrible auditioner. I mean, I still am. I mean, I'm better now, but I was really bad. I could get on stage and I would be great in front of an audience. But if I had to go in a room for 2 minutes and prove to them that I should get the role, I became like Don Knotts. You know, it was impossible to walk in there and do it.
Not in a good way.
No, and that's a really hard thing. And, you know, there's a lot of actors that are really good auditioners, but then when they get the role, they don't come through as much, and there's some people that can do both really well. You know yourself, it's a whole different skill. I was never good at it, you know. But I've gotten much better.
Yeah, it's like whenever I was trying to get a day job, and people would be like, well, why don't you work in sales? Don't you think you'd be able to convince people to do that? I was like, I could convince you I'm any person in the world, but I can't convince you to buy whatever crap that this place is going to try to sell. Like, no. Those are different skills.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, yeah, so I had them occasionally, you know, and now I've had pretty consistently the same manager, and I have a new agent now, but I have the same manager for about 8-9 years now.
And that's in LA though. That's a different situation.
Yeah,
is
that's
the
in
manager
LA.
Live theater or for film or for both?
They mostly out here. I mean, I do plays out here. I did one or two plays since I've been here, but they mostly send me on film and television stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what they. It's kind of like what they call pilot season now, although pilot season almost runs all year long now. But
yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot more stuff that's made outside of L.A. now, which is really, I mean, a lot of actors have moved to Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta's really hot right now.
Yeah, I hear that.
They're doing a lot of stuff in Atlanta. They're doing a lot of stuff in Carolina. A lot of actors have moved out because, you know, the pool is smaller. And I've got friends that have gone to Atlanta and said, you know, I'm going to stay here for a while because why not? If you can... you can book the same job in Atlanta that you can book here, then why not? And also, the business has changed so much now because what they're doing is they're doing a lot of what they call local hire. So it's much more attractive to them if you're an actor who has your own place in Atlanta and they don't have to fly you there and put you up. They're more likely to hire you because it costs them less money.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I'm pretty sure that's how they make all their decisions.
I'm sure that's how they make all their decisions too.
Yeah.
But
so you so you were in New York for just to backtrack to so before you moved to LA, you were in New York. You're doing plays. You're doing stuff with David Rabe and. What part of it, things seem to be going well as far as like you doing a bunch of plays, working on different projects with David Rabe and other playwrights? You had good friends, and you were putting a lot of live theater in. What made you decide to move to change venues and do film stuff? Or did you get film stuff when you were in New York and then got a taste for it and moved?
Well, you know, New York back then mainly had a couple of shows. You know, now they have a ton. They have a lot of stuff, but they had Sopranos and they had Law and Order.
Right.
And everybody did Law and Order. I think I did 8 of those things.
Yep.
You know, if you were a New York actor, you did a lot of Law and Order.
I love catching you on Law and Order.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
There was also a long period of time where I went home a few times because, you know, your grandmother got sick, and I went home and stayed home for quite a while there. And then when my dad was ill, I was home for a while. So I kind of popped out of my career in my 30s a little bit here and there. I would do plays locally in Boston, but I went home to be with family for a while.
Yeah.
And then I got that great job with that company, and I stayed home I was working in the corporate world for a while.
Hmm.
And that's when your grandmother was sick. And after she passed away, the people who owned that company, who now, if you're following this, but the people who own that company, the PR company that I work for, moved out to L.A., and they are now film producers.
Oh.
And they said to me, why don't you move out to L.A. and, you know, start auditioning? And I had a really good job with them, and I was in a financial position to do it, so I moved. And I've been out here about 10 years now, and it's been going really, you know, pretty well lately. But it took a couple of years to get because you're going to a new city.
Yeah.
You have to meet new casting people. They don't know who you are, and you know. So you know, after a certain amount of years, you know, I'm sort of in the pool now, and they know me, and so it's a little bit more consistent, you know.
Yeah, how many years did you have to, you know, sort of spend getting to know everybody when you first got there?
You know, it took about 5 years because, you know, I mean, the way it is out here, and it's probably the same way in New York, but, you know, you have to, your really big agents like your CAA and your William Morris, and when there's a film project that goes out or a TV project that goes out on what they call the breakdown, they're going to see those big agents first, and they're going to see their actors first. And then if they get through and they have a couple of parts available, they might see some more agents. But there's so many agents out here and actors But sometimes if your agency sends you in a packet to them, they might not even see you or look at you. Hmm. So you might never get an audition. And it took a lot of years of not getting auditions. And then finally, I would book one thing and I would do well and they would say, oh, who's that actor? And then, you know, it just sort of train rolls. And then I, 6 or 7 months ago, did that Major Crimes. Mm-hmm. And that was really good for me. I did a few episodes of Major Crimes. I met those producers. And it's like you're rediscovered because they go, wow, who are you? Oh, you know, we like you. Good actor. And they start to hire you, you know. And a lot of times they hire who they know. Sometimes they don't even audition. They just call up an agent and say, hey, is, you know, Joe Schmo available for this role? So, you know. It's like any business. You get to know people. But it's been about 8 years out here, you know.
What do you like more? Do you like New York or L.A.?
I love New York much more.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the theater. And out here, the theater is just not great. And it doesn't compare to what's in New York. And but the downside is, you know, New York is, I mean, Amy will tell you, New York is really expensive. It's expensive to live in that town. And here, you got a lot of nice weather. And my place, I have a beautiful apartment that I love that would cost me $4,000 a month in New York. And I couldn't afford it. But here, it's really cool. And I've gathered a bunch of friends out here now. So my life has kind of moved out here. But I miss New York every day. Yeah.
Really?
I really miss it. I leave on Thursday. I don't know if you knew this, Amy, but I'm going to Rome for 6 weeks.
No, I didn't know you were going to Rome. What are you going to Rome for?
I'm shooting a film in Rome for 6 weeks.
That's crazy.
You didn't know that?
I was hoping it was something mundane. I was
totally regular. Was, he's like, oh, I'm working on this PR. No, you're working on a film. No, I didn't know. We haven't really talked. I was, I'm excited. That's so real. That's really great.
Really?
What a wild Rome. Have you ever been to Rome?
I've never been to Rome, and I've been working on all these, I've been getting all these emails from production and all this stuff about when I'm leaving and who's picking me up and blah, 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 all this stuff. So it's exciting for me, yeah. It's
great. That's so great. Rome is where I went abroad in college.
Right. I remember.
And then remember Mom and Liz and Kelly and Georgia all came to visit me. So they did like a road trip through Italy, which I'm sure was very National Lampoon's, but they met me at the campus where my college had a campus in Rome. So that's really wild. I'm so excited you get to go to Rome. Go see the Pope if you can. The new Pope.
Yeah. What'd you say?
Go see the new Pope. He's fun.
Oh, hey, seems nice.
I actually, one of the guys that's in the film. This is a true story. Aunt is a nun and she's got connections. And so the Pope does a mass every Wednesday for priests and cardinals, and they let about 20 sort of civilians in. So we have to get interviewed by the church in a few days. There's four of us, and we're getting to go to this thing where you go and you're right next to the Pope, and he sort of changes his clothes in front of you or whatever he does.
The vestments and stuff. Yeah.
Before his vestments, before he goes out on stage. So.
Yeah, on stage. They call it the altar.
He puts his costume on. And
you get the backstage view. No, I gotcha.
Yeah, you get the backstage view, and we'll be there. I'll be there for Easter.
Oh my God, Easter's the best. Oh,
they love Easter.
Yeah, Easter
out there
in Rome.
I was in a spring Romer, and we were, I had Easter there with the Pope, two popes ago. John Paul, the one everybody loved.
Two popes ago. Pope.
Yeah. Two popes of the past.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh no, that's so fun. Oh, that's so cool. Is your if you can't tell us, that's totally fine. But does your is the movie that you're doing religious based in any way? Is like it kind of research for you to go?
No, actually, they just announced it in Variety. It just came out a couple of days ago. But it's I think I've told you about Bobby Maresco. Bobby and Paul Haggis wrote Crash and Million Dollar Baby.
Uh-huh.
And this is Bob Maresco's new film, and it's with a guy named I'll be working with Carl Urban, Sophia Vergara, and Andy Garcia.
Oh,
wow!
Yeah.
That's right. Sophia Vergara from Modern Family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we know.
Yeah. Wendell knows.
All the boys know who Sophia Vergara is.
I don't know who she is, but from the sounds of it, she's pretty.
She's pretty.
Absurd.
She's a pretty lady.
Her dimensions make. Whatever.
Yeah.
I really like Carl Urban too, though. Carl Urban, I've like since Lord of the Rings and Judge Dredd and.
Sophia Vergara, she at the end, I play the bad guy, and at the end of the movie, she shoots me in the head. I think I shouldn't give out that information.
I've had that exact same fantasy several times. Whenever
it practically cut out, no one will know.
We'll just beep it out.
We don't have that big a fan base. Don't worry, Joe. I was like, though, tell your new famous friends about it, you know.
Yeah.
I just had the image of Sophia Vergara putting a gun to my head pop up, and I'm just like so into that now. That's like a thing, I guess. I have.
All right, no.
We don't need to go down some weird Wendell road. I was like, this is my uncle. Don't say this.
I say one thing to her, I swear at her. And that's about it.
Oh, I love that you're the bad guy.
Yeah, those are the best roles.
Oh my God, you're so cool.
Yeah, I'm sort of the bad guy along with someone else who's bad.
Oh, fun. I was like, don't give it away. Yeah. Don't tell us anymore.
No spoilers.
Yeah. No. You don't have to tell us anything. No. It's in Rome.
No spoilers.
You're fine. You're the bad guy. I dig it. As long as it's not hidden, like, the whole time, it's like, he seems so nice. And then it's like, but in that podcast that one time, he said he was the bad guy.
So.
Man, that's wild. Oh, now I understand why you're afraid your apartment's going to be gone, because you're going for 6 weeks. That's a long time.
Yeah, I'm going to have a friend of mine. She's going to stay here and watch it for me while I'm gone.
Yeah, you're going to want to do that.
Tie everything down, yeah.
Tell her to bring some hot water with her, though, because if there's no
propane torches.
No, I mean, it's all fixed now. It's all taken care of.
But it wasn't for a while, yeah.
It wasn't for a while, yeah. We had an explosion in the basement of the building.
Oh, wow.
The furnace blew up.
That sounds scary.
No one was researching a role for a bad guy and made something blow up.
Everybody in the building are actors.
Oh, it sounds like the worst thing that happened is everybody's mad about water, so I guess everybody walked away okay. You didn't open with furnace explosion or basement explosion.
Yeah, it wasn't everyone's real mad because that guy who died in the basement.
Died and now he's haunting us.
Our building's a spaceship we shot off out of the atmosphere.
That's what happens when you want to live in a 1930s. You know, style building. It's, you know, it's old and it's got great molding and everything, but it's also, you know, old.
Yeah.
And it's got great molding. Yeah.
Great molding.
It's got mold they don't even have anymore.
That's how that goes. Oh man. Well, that's really fun. I like that you're doing this movie. That's really great.
That is.
I hadn't talked to you in a while, so I wasn't sure what sort of gigs that you were doing. As far as one thing I wanted to ask you, how has for you, like when you first started, what was it about theater that you really loved? And then like now, what keeps you going? Like what keeps you coming back? I mean, it like anything else is its own sort of like drug you're addicted to. Sometimes I think, well, I don't have any other skills, so I'm not going to do anything else. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, you know, what keeps you coming back and just keeps you ravenous for finding new roles and doing new projects?
You know, it's funny because I did a play last year out here, and a buddy of mine, came to see the play, and he's around me a lot. He said, you know, you should just always do a play because you're the happiest I've ever seen. I had that corporate job, and I was making really great money. I just wasn't that happy, you know. I mean, I made a really good amount of money, but the money wasn't really enough. I missed, you know, working as an actor. I like stage because it's immediate, because the audience is right there, and they're reacting immediately. You know what it's like when you're inside of a theater, and the play is going on, whether it's a comedy, a drama, whatever. The audience is, you know, is another character. They're actually a part of the play, and it's really immediate. Film doesn't have that. TV doesn't have that. You know, I do those. I'll do when I can, when they let me. Because I'm not a star, so occasionally I get parts, and it's always good because it pays well. You know, it pays a decent amount of money, not a lot, but you know, enough, more than theater.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as you know, listen, you moved out there, you started a theater, you're teaching improv, your life has become about it. You have to really, it has to be in your blood. You have to really want to do it.
Yeah.
Because somebody else, I would say, don't do it. Go get a job where you can earn money and live a happy life. I mean, I never had kids. I'm a single guy. I never had kids. That's the only thing I regret is that I didn't have a family. I mean, because I was so focused on trying to notch out a career that I really didn't, you know, have that. And if I could do it all again, I would do it the same way. I would just do it with a family. That's the only difference.
Well, I'll tell you how it goes. I mean, I'm actually a little worried about it because, I'm going to have the baby in maybe a month. In fact, I may have the baby before your episode airs. You know what I mean? Like, and I was thinking about that just the other day. It's like, how much of my existing lifestyle will I be able to maintain with this kid? I mean, when he's little, sure. You know, I can tote him around, make him do whatever I want. But, like, when he gets older and, like, has interests in school and after-school stuff, like, how much theater am I really doing? What sort of, like, how many classes can I possibly teach? And I really wonder how that is. So I was like, don't write it off as, oh, if only I'll let you know. Maybe in a couple of years I'll be like, Joe, hey, be cool with it.
Hey, you should try to pop the kid out early and send him with Joe to Rome.
Yes.
I have a lot of friends that have kids, and they work it out, you know.
Sure.
And I didn't realize my early 40s how much I really love kids, you know. And because, like, you know, when you and your sister were young, I was in my 20s and I was in New York, like, you know, being crazy. As I got older, then I was like, yeah, you know, I'd be around my friends with their kids, and I'm a godfather to my friend's little girl. She's like 5 now. And you know, kids are amazing. They're just amazing because they say the world hasn't gotten to them yet, you know, so they have that sense of honesty that just is beautiful.
Oh yeah, they're the best kind of people, honestly.
Oh, absolutely. They are. I mean, I can't wait to see my little nephew.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially because you're... I'm glad that your friends asked you to be the godfather. I can vouch for you as being a good godfather. You've done all the things that a good godfather could do. You've taken care of all the things that needed to be taken care of when my dad couldn't take care of them. So that was really great.
That's right, I was your godfather.
Yeah, you are. You're my godfather, absolutely.
You're doing pretty well, though, so I, you know.
Yeah, you're all right. You know. See what I tell you? You're pretty good at your job.
You didn't let God down.
Right? I mean, and in a couple months, we can high-five over both having Easter Mass with the Pope. It's going to be a good time. I can't wait to hear your Pope story.
No. Yeah, me and the Pope, we're going to be hanging out in Rome. We're going to go out to Vino together.
Oh, yeah. That's what he's like. That's what he's like.
He's got the best Vino. Yeah.
He'll be like, just be nice to people. That's pretty much my one rule. High fives all around. That's what Pope Francis is.
Yeah, you know. But I have to say, on the air right now. You know, how incredibly, seriously, Amy, I'm really proud of you because, you know, you're living the life. And there's a lot of people, especially out in L.A., you know, there's a lot of people that come out here and they want to be movie stars. That's what they want to be. They don't train as actors. They don't do any of that stuff. They just sort of show up and go, hey, I want to be a movie star. Because, you know, that's what... That's what television does today with some of these shows. And they just think, I'll come out here and I'll be a huge star. And sometimes they are. But someone like you and myself and all of my friends that I knew, you know, went to New York. And I really wanted to learn how to be a good actor. That's all I really wanted to learn how to be good. And I still am trying to learn how to be good. Yeah, because I look at my... You know, the guy I love is Daniel Day-Lewis. I love that guy. But you're doing it, and I'm really proud of you.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I mean, that's, in fact, talking to you about all the different gigs that you've had and all the different experiences and stuff like that. I mean, I think that's pretty much just it, is just keep doing it. I just won't stop. People will, you know, I just keep creating projects. And that's right. That's something that's slightly different, I suppose. I've only just recently signed with a film agent and done any of that. I haven't really gotten much from that. I've done a few commercials on my own before I got the agent. But you know what I mean? Like, the world that I'm in, Austin, Texas, is it's a different kind of place. When you were talking about the immediacy of live theater. I know you can't see it, but we're all nodding our heads because that's what we do. We do live comedy. And in fact, all of us work on a monthly live comedy show. And it's great to see the people's reactions, to see what's going on, to react sometimes and be like, why don't they get it? I don't know what they're doing, you know? Sometimes it's like, no one's laughing.
It's their fault, though.
Yeah, of course it's their fault. Yeah.
What's wrong with them?
It's funny that you said that, because I got invited, a friend of mine invited me the other night. He's a stand-up, and he's also an actor. You know, remember the show Mike and Molly?
Uh-huh.
He's the guy that plays Mike, Billy Gardell.
Uh-huh.
And he's a buddy of mine, and I hadn't seen him in a while. And he called me up the other night and said, hey, I'm going to be out in Irvine. Do you want to come out and see me? And Irvine's like from Hollywood. It's about an hour and a half. And I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to. So I drove out, and he was at the Improv out there. And there was like, I don't know, maybe 1,500, 2,000 people. It was like huge. And he came up, and he was brilliant. I mean, he slayed. He was so funny. And I kept looking at him and thinking, it takes, in order to do that, what he's doing, it takes time, stage time. It takes, and that's the same thing I feel about, you know, acting. It's like the more plays or the more shows you do or the more improv projects you work on or the more times you get in front of an audience, you just keep honing that, you know. And I watched him and I thought, wow, that's, you know, that's something that, he wasn't that good when he started, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It takes years of stage time. And he just had the audience in his hands. He was brilliant. So and I think that's what I want to learn what you do. I don't know anything about improv, and I wish I did.
Well, that's okay. You do movies in Rome for right now.
Yeah, we're pretty cool and all, but you're going to be at the Pope.
Yeah, so. Nobody's sending us to Rome right now, so you just do that. You get your thing, and then later we can talk about doing some comedy. But we'll do that later.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can... I've always wanted to tell you. I've heard the same room last.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, at a certain point, I especially because, you know, I'll have the baby in the coming years. If you have a break between amazing gigs where they're flying you around the world, you know, I'd love you to come to Austin. Though I'm super glad that you didn't come during South by Southwest. Because I remember the last time I talked to you, you were like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll come for South by Southwest. And I was like, no, that's the worst possible time to come to Austin. Even though I didn't, I realize now that I didn't convince you properly because I said, no, Austin becomes like New York City. You don't want that. And you're like, what? I love New York City. But no, it's like... It's like the city triples in population and everyone's douchey. So that's pretty much what South By is like.
Everyone's douchey.
Yeah, they're just not—they're just not nice. You know, they're all sort of everyone's got an agenda, and then everyone's trying to be famous. And you're like, relax. Like when they leave, the rest of us are like, ugh, aren't you happy to go back to just being regular? Yes.
Well, I mean, it's funny because. You know, like you say, it's this great gig, and it is. It's an amazing gig. But I'm not going to be, you know, those are the movie stars that are in the film. They'll be treated like movie stars, and I'll just be another actor, which is all I want to be. I just want to be employed. Yeah. And as soon as this gig ends after the 25th of April, I'll be flying back to L.A. and searching for another job. You know, it's not like they'll pop. I'm sure Sophia doesn't have to really search anymore. They probably just pop out of the sky for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's different there's different points in which that happens, you know what I mean? Like, and who knows?
Right.
Like, maybe you get a bunch here and there and you know, maybe gig to gig. I mean, but you still do it because you care and because you're
exactly.
driven to do that kind of thing. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't do it anymore if they didn't have people begging them to do it. So,
right.
you know, and that's all well and good. And a lot of them are just pretty people. And I'm not speaking for Sophia. I'm sure she's great at her craft or whatever. But I don't know her.
She's a very funny woman.
Sure.
I mean, I think that, by the way, and I hear from the powers that be out there that I know that are there that say, all three of them are just really great people.
Great. Yeah.
Really nice people. And I always like to hear that. That's cool. That's great.
That means you'll be able to have a good time and it won't just be a bunch of prima donna crap.
No, it's what I hear is it's not. And besides, Bob Maresco is, he's one of the greatest guys I've ever met in my life. You know, he's from, he's a guy that you should interview. In fact,
okay.
you know, Bobby Maresco has a real storied history. He, you know, grew up on the west side in New York. Grew up in a very tough neighborhood. His brothers were all part of, you know, they were all part of the Westies on the west side in New York. I don't know if you've ever heard of who they are. They were the Irish gang.
Yeah.
And he's a guy, seriously, he would be great to interview when he comes back at some point if he had an interest. He's really... you should Google him. Well, don't Google him now, though.
we're exploding with interest.
Anything.
Don't you worry.
Well, I won't Google anything right now. My phone's on the other side of the room so that it doesn't buzz too much while you're on the phone with us. But yeah, I mean, well, yes, any person that you would like to direct to us interviewing, we'll be happy to interview. But yeah, I mean, it's really just a... interesting to see, you know, the way people come at acting and what influences them to continue to do it. Sometimes I like to, because I do a lot of teaching, I like to inspire people to know that there are lots of ups and downs and that you have to just keep loving it to keep moving forward with it. So it's actually... every time you'll be like, yeah, I just got to work hard again for another gig. I know that that's hard on you, and I know that that can be difficult sometimes, but it just makes me think you're a stronger person, and then you're a stronger actor than some of the people who just get handed stuff. I mean, it's like anything. If you get handed something, you know, you don't care about it as much. It's not as... it's not really something that is hard won, and so it matters to you in a larger sense. You're going to do such a good job in this role and in any role that you get because you put so much effort into getting it.
Well, that's true, but remember, you know, the people that have gotten success from the business, they just climbed the ladder and got to the point where they are, and I think it's great that they're there. You know, I mean, it would be great to be offered things, you know, because that's the dream of, I think, a lot of performers. So imagine if you could just keep doing the thing you love over and over again and people were throwing money at you. But I'm sure for any of them, you know, Sofia Vergara or Andy Garcia or Carl Urban, they all started out somewhere where they had to work their way up, you know. And so I think it's great that they are movie stars. I think it's cool.
Your attitude and demeanor about the business is very uplifting, Joe. And I can see where Amy gets it, because Amy's always been like that as well. Hmm. Just, like, keeping her head up.
Well, you know, the thing is, and I'm reminded of this from friends of mine that all feel this way. Most people that I spend time with out here that are actors, they're not the Hollywood type at all. They're not, they don't have that attitude. They're just regular, cool people. And it's like, you know, sometimes when people get a little older in this business, they start to bitch and complain and moan.
Yeah.
And I never do, because I chose this. This is what I wanted to do. If I wanted to go into big business and make a lot of money in the corporate world, I could have done that. But I didn't want to. So if things get tough and I'm not always working and I'm looking for work and it's blah, 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 I just think, you know, I chose it. And I'm happy because I'm living the life that I want to live. And unfortunately for some people, that's not so true, you know? That's not true, too. I feel like a very lucky guy. The guy outside my window every day, I see him outside of my living room window. He collects cans every day. And I look down at that guy and I think, wow, you know, that guy's always smiling. He's just collecting cans. He probably doesn't have a place to live. I'm looking out my window saying, I got a place to live. I'm not rich, but, you know, so I feel very grateful for everything I have. Especially for Amy.
You're bringing it in. That was nice.
Like a good godfather.
That was good. Yeah, he's a quality godfather. Yeah, he takes care of me. All right, you like that? He's like, my life is great, especially because of you. Oh, Joe. Oh, man, you know, on such a sweet, uplifting note, I think we should wrap up the podcast, because it feels like that was such a lovely thing to hear you say, and I hope that anybody who listens to this, you know, can know that, you know, if they choose this career, then they can stay positive, they can be happy for the path that they're taking, and keep their head up, and the gigs will keep showing up, and then eventually someone will fly them to Rome, and they get to hang out with the Pope.
Yeah, well, you know. Anyway, I totally agree with you. Thank you so much, you guys, for having me. It's been a pleasure, I love you, and it's been great. And I'm sure we'll talk soon. I'll give you a call before I leave for Rome.
Yeah, give me a call if you get a chance before you head out, and then
I'll call you.
We love you too, Joe.
Okay, love you.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Yeah, you're great, man.
All right, cool. And I'll try to figure out. We need to figure out how to keep in touch while you're in Rome. I guess Facebook is still a thing. I don't know how the internet works in other countries.
There's an app. I'll forward you this app.
Okay.
You can put on your. Yeah.
Okay. Just because I'm thinking, you know, when I have this baby, I'd like you to see it.
Maybe show a picture of it to the Pope.
Yeah.
Can he bless the picture?
Yeah, I'll go and see if the Pope will bless it.
Yay!
They can do a lot of things with the Wi-Fi and, you know, 4G now.
Yeah, they got 4G in Vatican City. All right, thanks, Joe. Have a wonderful evening.
All right, honey.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
I love you. Talk to you
later.
Love
you, too. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.